Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
show number?
Yeah, I forgot to look again and check. I know it's over 1,500, but we got to get back to that and get you the exact number. Because we've been doing work. Good evening and welcome, welcome to the Hump Day Special. I'm your host, Mike Lewis, and I'm DJ Honeycomb. And as always, it is good to have you in the house.
Silk Tree Radio on the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and The Assassin, the Black Athlete Sports Network.
Get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, where I feel we'll be bringing some interesting intel tonight. And Radio Reggie down there, where the Washington Commanders are trying to spin some bullshit through the Commissioner Roger Goodell and Daniel Snyder. You should hear from Radio Reggie soon. some word out of Cleveland, Patrick should be kicking in sometime in the next hour. Happy birthday to my youngest daughter, Deborah Lillian Ingram, who should be 39 today. Yes, I was gonna make her middle name Shahrazad until I realized we didn't have anyone in the family that had grandma's middle name. So I had to put Lillian in there, which is my mother's name, to make sure she was taken care of in spite of what her mother is. That's a two-drink conversation. I'm going to leave that alone right now. Anyway. Yep, exactly. Carrying on. I got the bad man from the East Bay with me. Gary Norris Gray and me and Gene. You know, since summer has finally broken, there's one other ritual that must be covered. Actually, two, but I'll cover the first one now because, of course, we showed on Sunday in the Big Bag Tournament. And we know some folks know, but for those that don't, there's one song and only one song that is evidence of Juneteenth, which is now a federal holiday, so you must recognize that song, and my man Joe Kelly will love this, is Men Are Getting Scarce by Joe Tex, where Joe Tex in the song lyric recalls being in Navasota, Texas, eating barbecue and drinking red soda water on the 19th of June, according to the lady with the skinny legs, who Leroy did not want. Now, the 19th of June is obvious. Red soda water, I guess that's what they call soda down there in that neck of the woods. I know my lady, Linda Diane, would let me know for sure. But that's our official record of Juneteenth, so we want everybody to know that and recognize that. Now, since the first day of summer has passed, in beautiful British Columbia, the sun probably went down sometime around 11 o'clock at night. That is an amazing effect because being above the 48th parallel, it has the midnight sun effect. So the sun just goes and goes and goes. And, well, it's all downhill from here, but it's a beautiful thing. I once had dinner at 9:30 at night, and it was bright as day. I mean, blew my mind. Anyway, having said that, we carry on. And the other ritual that we must recognize is that of the barbecue. Now, we know folks are going to be grilling on the 4th. We know folks will be either going to a barbecue or starting one. We also know that there are specific anthems that suit every member of the family at the barbecue. We want to spit that out right now and get that out the way. Big G, what is your barbecue anthem? Is it Stone Soul Picnic by the Fifth Dimension? Pants in the Summertime by the Dramatics? Is it Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly and the Family Stone? Is it Be Our Family?
I'm going to throw you a curveball, okay?
What was that? Throw me a curveball. Go ahead.
My song for the barbecue is Family Reunion.
See, you buzz it. I was getting to that.
Because the great barbecue is a family reunion.
Well, that's pretty much ours too. That is the song. But the other songs, just for the record, are,
As I said, We Are Family by Sister Sledge.
Yeah.
Outstanding by the Gap Band.
Yeah.
Before I Let Go by Maze, and that's a big favorite among everybody.
Yeah.
Family Affair by Sly and the Family Stone.
It's a family affair.
Exactly. And, of course, Family Reunion by the OJs. That seems to be the one that encompasses the spirit of gathering everybody at the barbecue between bites of ribs and all that good shit like that there. Now, let's quickly go around the world in 80 seconds. We have, of course, the Congregation of the Liars Club down in Washington, D.C., spinning more nonsense and taking some damning testimony from some folks who are trying to hold up this country's democracy that still doesn't respect black people, but yet subjects us to more shit than anybody else.
Mm.
For the umpty-ump time, we heard the fucking phone call where Donald Trump is begging some asshole in Georgia for 12,000
votes.
Thank you. Now, he also says in the phone call that he won by 400,000 votes. Well, if you won by 400,000 votes, motherfucker, what the hell do you need 12,000 more votes for?
There you go.
You know? They lie like rugs. It's just terrible. You know? And then
this episode of Washington, D.C. is a disaster. Okay?
Yeah. It is.
Here's what I was saying. Why is it a disaster? The Democratic Party has not taken charge. Republican Party refuses to rebuke this nonsense.
Yep.
If we go into November of 2022, the Republican Party still backs this idiot, we got a problem.
Oh, there's a problem, all right. See, they're even expecting to lose seats, Gary. They're not even being quiet about it. They're letting everybody know there should be a swing in the midterm elections.
There's a little trickle here, trickle here, there in Georgia. Georgia Republicans have a real difficult time down there.
Yeah, we've seen some of that, but I'm just annoyed at the whole spectacle of this because it's all done for ratings. It's not done to solve the problem. You know, all those motherfuckers that falsely filed as electors, they should be in fucking jail right now. If they were black, they'd have been under the jail. If not on any shot.
See that's the whole thing about this. Is that Latinos?
Yep.
Asians?
Yep.
African Americans, if they had done the same thing that these white boys have done, they would have gave them pronto. It would have gave them immediately.
Well, I wouldn't say Asian so much, but whenever a brown or a black person gets killed, it's always translated by the press as a tragic accident. Of course,
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes.
When a news agency describes an 18-year-old gunman, when they are white, they are teenagers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When they describe an 18-year-old black gunman, they are an 18-year-old male gunman.
Yeah.
If you don't believe words, but you don't believe words matter, they do.
Oh, they do. They
do. Because when you talk about a teenager, your mind relaxes. When you talk about man, your mind breaks. And they know that, and they continue to play a game.
Suspect is a black male. We used to hear that shit all the time on Eyewitness News back in the day. And we still hear it today. But
you know, instead of them just being honest and saying, you know, somebody went up and shot a bunch of niggas, let's not really worry too much about it because they're black and we know that God will say forgive them. No, they don't do that. The only reason this gun legislation is going through is because of the way in which those little Hispanic kids were blown away. They could give fire, feather, nor fig about the black people that were involved. All it did was light up something, and the situation in Uvalde illuminated even more how fucked up things were. And now they're in a shitstorm down there that they can't extricate themselves from because
folks
are nasty.
Uvalde is the drug capital with the police protocol at the beginning of it.
Yes.
You're telling me that you have 21 guys with guns, two guys with armor, and you can't go into that school?
Mm-hmm.
You wait an hour and 10 minutes.
So more people can get shot. Yep.
These kids were calling 911. They were calling 911.
Yep.
Begging them to come to the doors.
Yep.
These morons were outside waiting.
That's right. Now, let me see. It's about 45 minutes. They should have killed a couple more people by now. And I hate to sound callous about this, but bottom line, that's exactly how this has gone down in the minds of a lot of people. And if this translates to what happened on January 6th, you need to understand the full scope of it. Donald Trump cheated. Donald Trump told you he'd cheat. He then instituted various methods and methodologies in which he would try to do this, right down to the fake electors. And in spite of this, this silly-ass white man lost. He's a loser. He doesn't want to hear that shit, but you know that's really what's bothering him, guy. You're a loser. You lost, bitch. And his friends were like, you lost. You lost. You lost. I'm sorry to tell you, but you lost. And that is burning his ass to no end. And see, the fact that this Show Enough Salt team has the nerve to sit back and squirm in the reality of, well, you're no success. Your name is not synonymous with success. You lost the fucking election. You put the country in debt and dire straits. And that he would piss on the democracy by going to bed with the Saudis, which is still another question that is not going addressed. Kushner went over there to parlay with the Saudis and confirmed that if this coup is successful, the Saudis would recognize this, they would recognize Trump's government. That's true. Just for me, it was on the rap that bad. Go ahead.
That told me everything I need to know about this fool. Okay?
Yeah.
So I need to know. You're going to enemy territory. Walk around with this fool. And be buddies. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, we're not kidding, unfortunately. I got Tony McLean and Professor Fred with us here, representing Connecticut and North Kakalaki exclusively. And, gentlemen, we knew that this thing was going to be a farce, but I don't know what's more insulting. Hearing the testimony of those two sisters and the terror that they experienced, or hearing Stone Cold conservatives say, you know, I would do anything, essentially, but I won't do that. Gentlemen, good evening.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. It's interesting to hear Gary's impersonation of Buzzy the Bird. You know, that's all I need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
thank you.
Because you know, he's not a study of anything, to be quite honest. But
why won't they kick his butt? What's wrong with him?
There you go, trying to make sense again, Gary.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Professor?
You're trying to turn Chanel in, you know, into what it is, and says shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not shit. Here's the major problem. Okay, you hear anybody who's a good American from almost any age, what do they tell you? Money talks. Love is the war. Okay. When you put money for me, you owe me. Okay? When you take my money, you do what I say.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, who knows what he has on some of these people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, that's
right. That's right. Buy all this stuff. And he has dirt on all these guys, and he's waiting to tell them about this dirt. It's like, come on, stop playing games. Let's get this done. Let's get back to real politics and get this country in the right place.
Well, it's crazy as this sounds. Donald Trump is basically this generation's version of J. Edgar Hoover without the black dress.
That's right. Yes, he is. He's not a cross-dressing motherfucker, but you better believe. I would not just say J. Edgar Hoover. He's Napoleon the Pig from Animal Farm. Same mentality. You know, he squeals like a bitch when he's under stress, but he always assumes he's in control, and he figures, you know, I can get somebody else to do it, which was the gist of what he was trying to do in trying to sign this other guy to job of being Hatchet Man for facilitating the fixing of the election and having him stay in power. Well, we all know, in some cases, you got to say it like it is. When a coup occurs in a foreign country, we're always led to believe that it's bloody, you know, hands roll, literally, you know. But the United States is supposed to be too sophisticated for that sort of thing. Well, we could just do some maneuvering and, you know, we have what would be considered a bloodless coup. We can do this and do that because we are white and we say so. And that's exactly what they were trying to do. And we've heard 3 days or whatever, how many days of testimony talking about what these motherfuckers did, knowing full well that if there had been a black person doing this sort of thing, their black asses would be under jail, if not already shot for treason. You know,
there'd be no hearings. At the very least, there'd be no hearings.
You got that right. Mm-hmm.
These people would have been railroaded big time. But Mike, let's look at the bigger issue here. Okay. You have the Republican Party has proven Trump to be pathetic in one major area. It's only because most too many of them got caught with their pants down around their ankles and their bent over. To paint the right picture, that's what I got to do. This direction you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
news. They believe, they take a lie and believe it. And amazingly, it's the Christian folks who believe all the biggest lies.
Right.
And that's not just hatred and play on words. But take it a step further.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Look at the candidates that have been put forward, both black and white, in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cruz shouldn't be allowed to push and promote empty ships because he didn't follow that immediately. McConnell wants a man of good respect and integrity, so and so who I can know. Just keep going right on down the list. They sold out. And once you've sold out, you have no integrity. You have nothing. They're literally walking around in public with their pants down.
Yeah. All you got to do is look at the list.
And finally, so they won't say that I'm prejudiced. Who in their right mind would, I mean, come on. We've had idiots, you know, in public office. The brother. Well, the dark skin dude.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that was the epitome of security and all that other stuff, right? Oops, here it is. Herschel Walker.
Yes, that's cool.
If there's any doubt about the confessions, and all that other stuff when it comes to playing football.
Yep.
Exhibit A. If there's a poster child but don't go to a white school and play ball, Exhibit A.
Yeah, I hear that. Moms used to say a hard head makes a sore behind, but this is one case where a hard head makes for a hard head and a dumb behind. Because this fool,
he can't even remember what he majored. He can't remember his major, nor if he graduated or not.
Yeah.
Which tells me he probably can't read, because if he could read, at least he would know the numbers besides the numbers when he looked at his transcripts.
You dumbass. Probably too busy that shit.
Well, you know what? Just one man's opinion. I know that in many ways he is, you know, the sort of the poster child for CTE. But to be quite honest, I think that's actually defamation of the CTE folks. Because I just think Herschel's just Frizzway, when they, you know, I always make reference to that, you know, peanut butter, you know, to that peanut butter and idiot sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ordered a double.
Oh yeah,
he ordered a double. I just think that it's just, you know, you would have had to have lost something. You would have had to have had something to lose it. I just don't think it was. I hate to, you know, to play into the whole stereotype, but
shit. Are you kidding? He is the stereotype. Plays the role of thinking he's a firebrand against the
evil Republican president. You know, he's full of shit. He was sucking Donald. He sucked. He just, I mean, he not only sucked it, he swallowed and spit. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Reggie, are you there? Eric, are you there?
Yeah, what's happening?
Hey,
Reggie.
Hey, what's up, brothers? How's everybody?
Take a bite. Yo, what's up, man?
I just got one question to ask.
What's the weather like where you guys are? Cause we can hell down here today.
A pool party up in here.
Big G, you sly dog, you. Rolling with the sixes.
That's how we do it in NorCal. It's the Players Club. It's the Players Club at Big G spot. You know, so that's where we go.
That's right.
That's where we go chop game. You know, and other things. You know, at Big G spot, right? So you know, Double G, it's got it pop. You know, it's 100 in sack. You know, it's been that way for about several days, all the way through the weekend. So yes, it's toasty. Plus it's the valley, so what happens is as the day gets later, it gets hotter, right? You know, it doesn't cool off. It actually gets hotter because it's in a valley, you know, surrounded by mountain ranges, that heat gets to city, you know. So just another day in NorCal, you know, but where it's hot. I mean, real quickly to some of what I've been hearing about, I guess this is what the hearing, what took place last January or so. I mean, okay. Well, you know, again, you know, a couple of things, though, in protocol, and again, you know, being an Air Force veteran, having taken that oath, what happens is, and where you can't touch Trump, and why, oh, he should be, you know, all the evidence, you know, the videotape is clear, you got people rolling up with Ziplocs, you know, zips, looking to zip people up, and they had roadmaps to get in, and there was body counts and all kinds of things. I mean, we physically, the world, we all globally seen it, right? So, I mean, it was kind of obvious. But the thing that this system follows to the letter is the protocol. Donald Trump was the commander-in-chief. Regardless of the dislike, the disdain, the pomposity, everything that took place, he holds secrets right now because he sat there and had 100% access to information. There was a situation where, and he still does, he's underneath that auspice as a former president of the United States. Like it or not, that's his declaration. Therefore, he's protected. And he knew that from the moment, you know, the hit was ordered and all the chaos took place.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and he knew that. And so when you're the commander, and that's why the military did a stand down, because he wanted the military to do various things. And they said, we will not intervene. So, they actually went against him. And he started calling them treasonous. And guess right, based on his position, and when he makes that statement, he is correct as commander-in-chief, like it or not. So the moment a person gets in that position, the eagle's going to follow those protocols no matter what. That's the system. Mm-hmm. You know, and so all the scuttlebutt and language, and he can endure that all day long. He's not going to lose his pension. He's not going to lose his Social Security protection, you know. Yep. And he's going to try to put
Eric,
him in the
Eric, this man, okay, I'm going to tell you something, you gentlemen. This man is going to jail. He is going
to
jail.
And real quickly to that, I mean, that's always subject to a conversation, and that's, at this point in time, purely your opinion, right? And you're entitled to do so. It's purely an opinion.
Okay, as an history major,
I'm not denouncing any of your credentials. I know who you are. So I'm not denouncing that, but when I was, at all, it's not about that. The reason being is that, you know, there's a reason why old mafia dons go out back to Italy and just die outside the mansion villa.
The old country. Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying? There's a reason these things happen. And that has nothing to do with opinion of what the once was, because right now there's been huge, overwhelming evidence of why a person should do certain things or why they should be locked down. And you're entitled to have that opinion. I'm not here to debate that, nor do I want that to be the direction of the conversation, because to me that's an individualized perception you have. And others may have the same, and I'm not here to say they're right or wrong or that won't take place. I know people who despise Trump to no end, but that's up his alley. I have no feelings for Donald Trump one way or the other. You know what I mean? But the reason being is the United States right now and this economic system, they need a sideshow too. So this fits right on time, because this economy in this country is not doing too well. Let's keep that 100. If anyone needs to go to jail for the crime, well, let's look at this economy. Now, like it or not, this is not going to be a happy place, because sometimes people are so staunch one way will always launch their emotions. Things seemed a lot cheaper under Trump, and that doesn't mean it was better, right? I'm not saying or he did a better job, this, that, and the other, but that economic impact.
Eric, what I'm saying to you is, this. What Donald Trump did was instigate other states to illegal actions.
We witnessed everything Donald Trump has done, and he's still a free man. He's still on tour. So again, Donald Trump is an entity and an agent for a corporation process that he doesn't stand alone. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, to keep the emphasis on him, the person, was a 5-year quagmire that took place. Now, it's still taking place. I mean, my attitude is F Donald Trump. He's a private citizen today. That's what he is. And so what took place during that prior thing, and the way that you want that perception of what his future will be, you know, when has he ever gone under oath or ever been brought into any form of questioning? When that moment happens, then we can talk about jail. There's still due process.
Yes.
There's no due process yet. That's everyone's opinion of what's going to happen to him based on history, his story. True. We can break that down and nucleate that down to an ion and find that that's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we know that a lot of that story is not written truthfully. So I'd rather know about my story, which is the real mystery, the my story, that what we come from and what we have here above everything else is intuition, discernment, and higher reasoning, which is above man-made protocols that you speak of.
Yes.
And I'll leave it there.
Now, having said that, you know, what we have here is a situation where you have a clusterfuck, people asking questions that they know the answer to. But the bigger issue is asking the questions that lead to the other questions, such as, what were you doing there with Bible in your hand with these guys who had no identification, no insignia, came out of nowhere and tried to say that they were members of Homeland Security trying to secure people? You know, these were your shock troops. This was right out of the Vierte Reich, the Third Reich, any other Reich before that. Nobody asked where they came from. What was the allotment for them? Where is the line item that says we spent this amount of money on these people? All those are questions that break it back down to the W-5 of all this bullshit. In other words,
and you know what, Michael? And you know what, Michael? That's the real quickly. That's the topical layer, and underneath that's 40 other layers.
Yes.
You know, the old saying is this system is a jigsaw puzzle chasing a complex cryptogram under the guise of no satellite communication and trying to find the coordinates with absolutely no place of knowing where to begin or start it. Who started the circle? This layer here is, I mean, figure out the Kennedy assassination. They have thrown so many zillions of roadmaps out there. There's no formal way, right?
Yeah,
and so Trump, you know, there's no formal way. I mean, that thing was thrown out there so many different ways and there's so many different angles. And it's the same thing that when Trump was president, he would say, hey, I'm going to release these Kennedy assassination papers, right?
He never did.
Target. I Harry, you know, I'm not done. He said there was a target date to do so. He released some of them. He did open the books, but he pumped the brakes on a lot more because he said what he did. He released it twice, and what he said was, "This is a threat to national security. I cannot release this ish now." You know,
that's
there's
exactly
some smoking guns in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know
that's
what I mean?
Exactly,
and so, but
he,
you know what I'm saying? And so the deal is, you know, the way this has been twisted and spun so many ways. I mean, this man's talking about his VP and everybody else. You know, they can say he's crazy. Some can say he's got balls, whatever the situation may be. But he sure ain't never been able to be talked down to. Now, I don't like his methodologies or other thing, and I'm not a cheerleader for any, you know, person in the political realm, right? You know, I'm just not. But the reality is these people and their constant one-dimensional viewpoint, Trump this, Trump that, get Trump locked. I mean, he's winning every time that conversation happens.
He's winning because he's got people who are dining on chunky peanut butter and idiot sandwiches, and there's no Kool-Aid to wash them down. That's true.
And they're in position. That's the problem. They're in position.
Yes, they are in position. Now, we must ponder some of the rest of this, but we first have to take a break here, and we will be back with this version of Spy versus Spy. Engaging in badnash here regarding this thing, let's not forget that a coup has already been perpetuated against the United States of America, that this happened in 1963, and that the layers that we speak of here had already manifested long, long ago. The movie Executive Action in 1973 exposed all that, and several books after that exposed that. The fact that at least 30 people passed away that were connected to Kennedy's assassination from 1955 to 1968 defied an actuary that said that the odds of all these folks dying was 130 trillion, trillion I say, to one. So even though there may not be blood on the streets, the people who tried to threaten Lady Ruby and her daughter, they had no heart. They're a bunch of punk bitches because they didn't go in there and do it. They know if it had been done, there would have been investigations about the tragedy of Ruby Freeman. But they didn't have a heart to do it. We know these punk motherfuckers were operating under a bully. And they know that the bully was a punk bitch to begin with. So if he didn't have no heart, how could you expect them to have any? And I'm not being funny when I say this. I mean this sincerely. Donald Trump not only is a loser, he's a punk bitch who's got no fucking balls, and his wife probably has more stones than he has because he tried to let other people do his dirty work, and he wasn't even mean about it. He made it clear, and you can disguise it with the noise all you want. If I can't have this, nobody can have this. This is exactly what a Stone Cold cracker would do. And a Stone Cold cracker, in my mind, is a saltine. And you can try to cover it up any way you want. It doesn't change the truth.
Yep. Second the motion. Can't really add
before
to that, man.
Sports. Yes. Before we get to sports tonight, I just had to get that off my chest.
No reservations for you, Michael. No reservations for you, Mike, at Trump Atlanta's casino.
No shit. You know. But if we look at the scope of the crime, and he was sweating his balls when Letitia James was coming out his ass, because he knew half the stuff he did was RICO stuff. You know, National Football League, Woody Johnson, the owner of Jets, you know, his balls are sweating too because the gambit with the golf club out in Scotland, wherever the hell he was, it was going to come back to him in one way or another. There's a lot of shit that will hit the fan once all this dies down. If they say he can no longer run for public office, that will set shit off. And there will be blood in the streets. There will be more people talking about Fort Sumter's going to secede, and there'll be a new civil war. I say this not as speculation or hoping that it would. I'm saying this because this thing has been on this path, and that's why they're talking about replacement. That's why they're talking about, well, we're running out of white men. Yeah, you're running out of white men. Genetics proved that, you stupid motherfucker. But what can I tell you? You know, don't let those facts get in the way. Now, having said that, unless anyone else has any last words, we can table this and get on with sports.
Sounds good to me.
Now, two things to consider. I had Radio Reggie here trying to check on what was going on down in D.C. regarding Daniel Snyder and his bad behavior. Yes, yeah, he out the country. He out the country because he know he's on the
way.
What was that, Fred?
So he's left the room.
Yeah, he's left the room, all right. Yeah, to quote my little lanolin, he's on the lam because he knows what he did. This is like that old movie, I Know What You Did, and I Saw You, and I Know Who You Are, whatever the hell that title was.
I know what you did last summer.
Yeah, we know it too. And unfortunately, everybody else should as well. Now, this proves what teeth Goodell does not have. You know, we forget the most simpler things. Goodell was hired by the owners. He was not hired to fire owners. He was not fired or hired to get rid of owners. He was not even hired to discipline owners. He was hired to put on the facade that
somebody who's actually going to do something. He is the overseer, the very highly paid $50 million a year overseer to keep the natives in line. And he has no say when it comes to the owners of the teams. That's why Daniel Snyder is on the land, because having the cheerleaders do the things that they did, well, we speculated on that too. Actually, even Reggie brought up some of that stuff. But there was no teeth. There was no follow-up. So all these so-called sports journalists, you're full of shit too, because you didn't tell the truth. And it had nothing to do with trying to do a super scooping of anything. You simply had to think what the facts were. You know, Jerry Jones, well, I can't say Maury Povich quit his show because Jerry Jones was about to find out if he was the father or not, but it was made clear. All this shit was spilling out, and there was so much tea that there was nothing to drink, let alone spill. The owners got caught with their feet, hands, everything in a cookie jar, and they couldn't extricate themselves out of it in time. So what exactly is Commissioner Goodell running? He's running nothing. He's being run. He's being run by the owners. Ask Mr. Kraft. He knows. Ask Jerry Jones. He knows. None of these motherfuckers know what's going on because they're not supposed to know. And Goodell, all you can do is wiggle his finger at him and say, shame, 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 you naughty boy. Nothing. Nothing will happen. There will be a lot of smoke and fire, Sturm und Drang. There will be nothing happening.
In their eyes, Daniel Snyder broke the number one rule of the Million Dollar Boys Club. What's done here, what's said here, stays here.
Yes.
So once you do that, you know, once you do that, you are basically treated like Tessio, Luca Brasi, Fredo, all
of
that.
With the fishes. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Right.
Matter of fact, some of the fishes may actually say, "Hey, move the hell over. This is my place."
Well, Daniel Snyder Barzini is still he's still sitting at the heads of the families, right? He's still the official
mm-hmm.
owner with all the dirt,
mm-hmm.
and so he's taking me on Mertico, though. Yeah, he's
mm-hmm.
taking me on Mertico. He's saying nothing right now, which is the wise decision. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So far, no one's asked him to try to veal at this point in time right now.
Of course, you know, Goodell will not make him an offer he can't refuse. And so
there we go.
With that, you know, and so the old saying is, you know, give him a living, but don't let him be that close to the family. So he still has his living.
There you go. There you go.
He still has his
there
living.
You go.
And so when I hear these things, and again, back to the protocols of what's happening in D.C., it's amazing that people are debating to find out who's the least corrupt out of all these corrupt MFers.
Thank you.
Yeah, really. Really.
The people who are pointing the fingers at everyone, who's the least corrupt person in the room?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, come on. I mean, in other words, if someone is passing an assessment on these people
mm-hmm.
and they're less corrupt, when we start
mm-hmm.
peeling back their layers
mm-hmm.
and their statements, I mean,
mm-hmm.
yep.
the current VP has put more brothers in jail than Trump.
There you go.
I'm out here, Attorney General in Cali. So my point being,
mm-hmm.
again, who's the least corrupt when we watch all this folly?
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
The $64 question.
And to hear people debate about this shit,
you
know, the finger pointing, who's the least corrupt?
Mm-hmm. And Mike, to sort of stay in that D.C. Snyder or whatever,
yep.
Methinks that, you know, as they're basically trying to slowly escort Mr. Snyder or Mr. Barzini, however you want to call it, out the door, the guy who I think that they're setting this up to be for the next thing is probably right up the street, being Mr. One Jeff Bezos.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's favorite astronaut or astronaut at this point in time right now.
I mean, Bezos is balling out of control. You know what I mean? And whenever you create a model that, you know, is assisting people do certain things, however that's defined, you're going to get that Billy, right? So that was his intellectual property. Ball on. Yep. He's playing, you know, ball on, ball out. Shit. That's the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's your free enterprise. You know what I mean? Yep. And so I'm always more apt to see a business person anyway run things. At least this system runs on a corporatocracy anyway, because these are 50 states with their 50 corporations within the whole. That's what they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They are independent portions of the corporation. Why is a person called the president? He's the president of the corporation.
There
you know what I mean?
Go.
And the governors run the different magistrates, and it's all broken down, city council and all that shit. And so when you see, you sit around people not even having a remote idea of what this game is, go to them and say, okay, all right, so you know, you're upset about, you know, watching these crazed crackers, you know, forever not being able to fly on an airplane, being chased by the feds everywhere, getting locked down, being put on no-fly list, having their taxes analyzed over and over again. They are destroying all these liaisons that bum rush this country, right? I mean, behind the scenes, right? There's people, there's a body count. You know, that lady that tried to scale it, you know, she got popped. We don't hear about that guy getting prosecuted because that's what he was supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? And that's unfortunate to the tenderfoots out there, but that's how this game is played. You know what I mean? If you get the candy, a.k.a. a gun, and you don't bust, what the fuck do you got to say about anything?
Exactly.
I mean, ultimately speaking. And so, again, you know, when it's time to look at the thing, no one missed a meal on this damn phone call when those assholes scaled that damn Capitol.
You right about that?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody missed the meal. Exactly.
And this is a damn MFN meal. And they're sitting around here debating about this shit. Like, that's going to change the trajectory of dropping their gas price $4 of what it was several months ago. There was no fucking supply chain issues.
Nope.
You know what I mean? There was no formula issues. I mean, now there's a tampon. I mean, right?
Yep.
I mean, the tampons, I mean, or not, and I'm not being specific to anyone about that, but there's a shortage. On and on it goes. Oh, I mean, and then people are sitting around worrying about a motherfucker wearing some Buffalo Bill headdress and a Minnesota Vikings, you know, friggin' caricature dude with a fur vest with a tie, like he's going to change my life, or I should be pissed off at him.
Exactly.
I mean, what is this shit?
Eric,
you know,
why doesn't somebody ask the far more pertinent question?
Yes,
how
sir.
Is it that we are the quote unquote world leader in business and production?
Yes, sir.
And all that kind of stuff?
Yes, sir.
But we don't
yes,
we
sir.
Don't produce anything. We don't produce.
Thank you.
We got 2,000 of oil and gas. We don't produce that. We can get all of these cheaper.
And that's a great point. Backed up, can't get unloaded, right? I mean, Long Beach, backed up. I mean, freighters can't get in. And you're right about that because, you know, I know people in this financial world that were doing real sales, and I won't talk about the industry, it was the tech industry, but because of the tech industry and this trade, they cannot expect their revenue on commissions they were getting all day long under the last administration into 2024. Interest rates are the highest it's been in 30 years.
I believe that.
All right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so while all that's taking place, now everybody within the corporation feels that pinch.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's something you can touch, feel,
now,
taste.
In that corporate vein, this is something Tony and I discussed. I want to take it to baseball and the fact that quality control is something that a lot of folks don't, you know, equate with sports and productivity. But Tony and I were kicking it, and we came up with some interesting numbers. Now, we saw in football how the running back had been diminished
in use and productivity. We saw the same thing with pitching. Tony, if you will, please elucidate.
You know, it was astonishing, but not really astonishing. But we all remembered Bob Gibson's 1.12 mark in 68.
ERA.
You know, the year of the pitcher. Yeah,
ERA,
the year of the pitcher. That same year, of course, you know, Denny McClain, the last 30-game winner as well. Now what's forgotten is that you had a Triple Crown winner that year as well, Yastrzemski. But he was the only guy to hit over 300 in the American League.
Yep.
To win the Triple Crown. So what does baseball do? They lowered the mound so that they could, you know, and it was ironic because baseball at the time was going into their 100th anniversary for the 69th season. But what we've seen over the years, and what we basically did the other night was, I always use the 1971 season as a gauge as to like the height of pitching, because that's still the only year where one team had four 20-game winners on the same
squad,
right? American League champion Orioles, who wound up losing in seven games to the Pirates, who ironically did not have a 20-game winner on that team that year, by the way. But, still we're strong. I basically say all that to, in that day, and we'll use the Orioles as a gauge. The all four of the starters both had double figures in complete games. Matter of fact, the quote unquote punk of the four, Pat Dobson, basically had 12. He was the low man on the totem pole.
Yes.
And that same year, and again, we're talking about major league leading guys. There were over five pitchers that had 300 or more strikeouts. And also, more importantly, you had at least seven starting pitchers do over 200 to 300 innings pitched. Now I can hear the Tommy John surgeries going on as we speak when I mention 300 innings. In regards to that, and just how much the game has changed. But it was a gradual thing. You know, we did like five different years, like a 10, 15 year gradual thing. Less 20 game winners, less 300 strikeout pitchers, matter of fact, and the less 300 games. We didn't go into the saves, because saves didn't really become a factor until I want to say like 72 or whatever. But mainly we wanted to stick with starting pitching, because believe it or not, boys and girls, starting pitching is still actually important in Major League Baseball. Despite what they tell you on EA Sports or any other what have you. But the thing is, much like how the running back in the National Football League has been devalued, and Mike, that might be the next project to do. After sitting down and thinking about it. Because you can sort of start off with 1972 and work your way back 10 years, because that was the last year where I think I think 90% of the teams in NFL had a 1,000-yard winner. And as we know now, 1,000 yards is sort of passe now. You have to be considered elite.
Where is Franco's Italian Army when you need him?
No shit.
And, And it's interesting with Franco.
He says 72. I mean, Franco's Italian Army. I mean, you know, hey, he was on collard greens and spaghetti before everybody.
And if I remember correctly, he actually caught about 40, 50 balls coming out of the backfield, you know.
He changed the game. He changed the game for the Steelers back in there offensively because, you know, Bradshaw wasn't doing it. And Joe Willie Gilly, you know, they had that controversy there. But it's kind of
right.
You're right about the saves issue because Tug McGraw – so you got to believe 73 Mets or was the guy that kind of like, you know, brought in the save guy, right? McGraw was the first person that had that attention, you know, when he was like, oh, you got to believe, oh, time for Tug McGraw for the save, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which created the save populace. But it's kind of interesting with the lower the mound because cats like Marichal, you know, they had that high leg kick at that high mound.
Mm-hmm.
It was illegal seeing them in Koufax and Drysdale. With all that motion, were tough to speak. But back to the arm strength and the coaching, I remember Wilbur Wood in the 70s, a knuckleballer, pitched a doubleheader.
Yeah, Wilbur Wood.
And Eric, it's ironic you bring up Wilbur Wood because in that era of the early 70s, you know, him, I guess Hoyt Wilhelm, Joe Enfield Negro. You had a few more knuckleballs, but Wilbur Wood just took it to the extreme. Now,
We did those
5 years, like in the 70s, whatever. Wilbur Wood is in the top five in wins. Innings pitched.
I didn't know that.
And the thing about it is, good pitcher, very good pitcher, but a mediocre at best White Sox team. Now, granted, in 72, they got within a few games of the Swinging A's that year because of Dick Allen, you know, that tremendous year that he had winning the MVP. But they never really got close there. And ironically, if I remember correctly, Wilbur Wood's last year with the White Sox as a full-time starter, one of his starting mates that year was a fair to Midland pitcher who was born in Colorado by the name of Richard Goose Gossage.
That's exactly right. That's right. He's in the White Sox organization. Forgot about that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That red and white pinstripe was a cold uniform. That short thing that Beck put him in was horrible.
Red
and white pinstripe was a really cold uniform, you know, built with some cold uniforms back then for the Sox.
Yeah.
You know, but Wilbur went through a doubleheader, man, and I think he went all nine.
back then, you know, you would need a military junta to get a guy to pull a guy in, like, you know, the seventh or eighth inning, you know?
That's right.
Here for nine.
True.
You know,
true.
I always said, if Tony La Russa managed the Cardinals in the 70s, and he brought his little narrow ass out there to take out Bob Gibson would put the rap of God on that man.
Out of Philly, Steve Carlton, I think he went 27-9 one year. Left
27-5.
Steve Carlton was no joke, man.
He won almost 50% of the team's games that year.
The Phillies won 59 games in 1972. Steve Carlton won 27 of them on his own.
Dude, that's only 59. Wow. I mean, Carlton was no joke, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Carlton and every four. Guys pitch every fourth day, you know? And see, the thing was back then, you know, when you were like, if you were a Wilbur Woods, a Tom Seaver, a Steve Carlton, a Vida Blue, a Ferguson Jenkins, and so on.
Vida,
Mickey Lowe.
Vida.
You would see when you know, it wasn't like when you pitched, you were going up against, say, the third or fourth starter. Still, routinely.
It was a great. It was Seaver against Carlton, that, right? It was those.
Yeah,
it was those kind of matchups.
Where's John Blue Moon?
And where's John Blue Moon Odom when you need him? Speaking to the brothers,
right.
Where's John Blue Moon Odom? But
we
said by the blue. Real quick, real quickly to that point. Yeah, Don Wilson and J.R. Richards too with the
yeah.
Astros.
Yes.
I got Patrick Farrar with me. Patrick, can you hear us?
Live and living, fellow coach.
I got Reggie in the house as well. Reggie, can you hear me?
Doing well.
No,
okay. Got to bring back old memories and baseball.
Oh, look. Hey, look. Now you're a Dodger guy, right?
Am I black?
So we're talking on my daddy's lap. Mm-hmm. We're talking Don Sutton. We're talking Claude Osteen. We're talking Jim Brewer.
Andy Messersmith.
Well, Andy Messersmith
Bert Hooten was a real good pitcher.
Bert Hooten.
And what's
that
knuckleballer?
Charlie Huff. And see, the thing about the Dodgers. And they've sort of gone back to that. But the thing about the Dodgers was, even if the Dodgers were fair or to Midland, they were slaves to their pick. They wrote books about, the Dodger way,
because
see, LaSorda was still, coaching at Vero Beach or what have you. But their whole thing was they were slaves to their pitching, them and the Orioles, to a certain extent. There was
mm-hmm.
a thing where
mm-hmm.
it was always about pitching. And there was always more of a premium set on pitching, it seems like, back in the day. Now, we're beyond the whole chicks dig the long ball now, because
They dig the steroids.
But see, what the thing is now, I don't want to call everybody Dave Kingman, but what's so bothersome now is that whole. I mean, nobody takes walks anymore. Nobody tries to work the count anymore. Nobody tries to, You see it. Like, you literally have to watch a bunch of games.
College baseball,
yes. But you would think that. But once they get to the major leagues, that's all thrown out the window. It's really crazy.
What do you think? Is San Francisco Giants to have one single sacrifice fly?
Wow.
I saw 2 weeks ago. Aaron Bull. I think it was the next.
I mean, where's Freddie mm-hmm. Pottek when you need him? So.
Dusty Baker on line three. Dusty Baker on line three.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Johnny B. Baker?
Yeah. You literally, unless you have the baseball package or lucky enough to be able to, and you can watch, multiple games a night, you literally have to go to hell and hunt for,
who wants to spend for 3.5 hours and watch a 10-inning game, i.e. the Nationals in the field?
It is a mess, kind of watch that. But real quickly to the Dodger way and their pitching, a lot of that was laid down by Big Don Newcomb, who was always in the 3-3. Honorable Brother Don Newcomb is the pitching guru of the Dodger way.
Don't forget guys like Joe Black, former HBCU standout as well.
I remember Joe.
Al Downing should be remembered more for just giving up 715. Al Downing won 20 games a couple times with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the biggest blemish on his career is that he began his career with the say it with me, those motherfuckers from the Bronx.
But I mean, back to the and real quickly, back to the honorable brother Al Downing. All of us could have hit a home run on that big wiffle ball pitch he gave Hank.
I mean,
he threw that. The only thing he didn't do was throw it underhanded, you know, because it was laid out.
Hey, it was so bad. The catcher looked at Hank and said, "Hey, Hank, it's coming high and tight. Ride that bitch."
Say, Tony, but you know, Tony, to your point,
what's intriguing about this, though,
to your point, I
argue with this every morning. I get my papers from him. We've known since high school. His father is one of the fellas. If you know what I mean. Wink, wink, the change. that's what he is. That's what
right.
he is. His father
right.
was Sunderland. That's why
right.
he got a store for 40 mm-hmm. years. 50 years
right.
now. But the point is,
right.
he's a baseball guy. But we argue right. every morning about baseball. And one of the things that he doesn't want to deal with, and it's true, and it drives me crazy, is the fact that I told him, I said, the game is played now, unfortunately, in many cases, dictated by upstairs, not the manager.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you have that. And if you want to know a prime example of it, if you watch baseball, you know, years ago, who was calling balls and strikes? The catcher. Now the catcher
yes,
looking in the dugout. The catcher looking in the dugout, all right? Of course, you know, the manager gives the call. But who's talking to him on what to throw? That
exactly.
has really hurt the game to the point in which the analytics people are so involved with what goes on that it has made these kind of changes that really, really hurts people who really like baseball.
And Mike, let me make a startling revelation here.
Mm-hmm.
I like analytics, but. Mm. As a buffer, not as the be all to end all. That therein lies the problem. Analytics with any sport, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, or what have you, they should be used as a buffer, as a conduit or as a side dish, so to speak. It should
not be
the be all to end all, and therein lies the problem.
Data matters. Eric, to quote Anthony McLean.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's a payroll that must be met somewhere.
And this is where
analytics causes a problem. If we go back to that 1972 Oriole team, you had a team that had literally four aces on it.
20 game winners.
Four.
Mm-hmm.
You were lucky if you had a good team that had two 20-game winners on it back then. But an ace was ace, and an ace means you get paid. So
Elrod Hendricks was the catcher, right? What's the number of
right.
Elrod Hendricks?
And Andy Etchebaron. Two.
Now, that goes back to Patrick's point. Elrod Hendricks could call a great game just like Manny Sanguin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But you wouldn't know. Because the aces were the ones getting paid. This is where specialization turned pitching into wussification. You couldn't have J.R. Richard pitch 30 starting games a year now. You know, J.R., oh, no, we're going to cut him down. They're going to neuter him. And, of course, if he hadn't had the tumor, they would have thought he was being lazy. So having said all that, aces turned the financial strata into a whole different play. So when the analytics folks came on, they were the equivalency of efficiency experts. They were breaking everything down. Yes.
And Mike, let me throw it at you. Here's the second part. Easy to see. Particularly if you watch the baseball network. What's the thing that they show the highlights most in any game?
Home runs. And Patrick, the next motherfucker that says exit velocity, I'm gonna drive to their
exit
home.
Exit velocity.
Man, I'm gonna go home. Put this, that old, like that old Sir Mix-a-Lot line. Make Clint Eastwood slap his mama. That's what I'm so sick of it.
And guess what, guys? That's how baseball is promoted. All over the analytics now.
So the 70s Orioles, right? Didn't they have an outfield of Robinson, Blair, and Bumbry?
Right. Bumbry came later. Bumbry was more 73, 74. 71.
Don Buford. I knew there was another brother out there in that outfield.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
It was Buford.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, keep it going. They didn't have the afros of Gary Matthews, Bake McBride,
Oscar Gamble was King Afro.
Yes.
Oscar was Afro's on steroids.
The Soul Patrol outfits. That's when. So those pitchers had to have great defense. Buford,
yep.
Blair, Frank,
yep.
And the brothers in Philly backing up Carlton, right?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie Smith, Willie Davis. Mm-hmm. Who else was in that L.A. Dodger outfield? It's another brother out there as well.
Willie Crawford, and by the way, in 1974 they traded for a young kid from Atlanta by the name of Johnny Lee Baker.
Johnny B. Baker. If his mama called him Dusty,
I'm gonna call him Dusty. So. Those brothers
was doing work behind those pitchers. Okay, go ahead.
To piggyback on that Orioles team, the number one prospect for the then Rochester Redlegs for the Orioles back then, a decent young outfielder by the name of Don Baylor.
Donnie Baylor. And because there was a lot of brothers out there behind these starting pitchers,
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, putting in all that work.
For old school stuff, like old school guys like us, you know, it was nothing to see 5-6 brothers. Like, see, truth be told, one of the allures to me about the 70s A's. I mean, look, I told Mike the other night, I read By the Blues autobiography when I was a kid. And he said every year he would put two dimes in his baseball pocket because that was a reminder to him I was going to win 20. That was my thing. So little silly ass me,
mm-hmm.
I go get two dimes, put it in my – now, I don't think I've won – I don't even think I've spent 20 strikes in my whole career, let alone win 20 games. But that was a pitcher, I would have done
something like that, too, if I knew about it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that whole vibe that the A's had, you know, we mentioned the Blue Moon Odom, Campy Campanaris. Now, people forget, Reggie got hurt in the 72 playoffs. He tore his hamstring.
Yep. Yeah, George Hendricks, that's right. He was a great hitting coach for many years.
Absolutely, great hitting coach. Yeah,
you know, every national team had three black albums before every one of them.
Oakland was loaded.
Think of the '60s Giants. Now you already had Willie. You already had the other Willie. Not to mention Jim Ray Hart.
Yep.
And
Bobby Bonds.
Bobby Bonds was dope. He turned out to be a pretty decent player, if I remember correctly. But that was the thing. I mean, look, all of us would wait until, like, say, June or so, when Ebony would come out with their baseball issue.
That's right.
You would see all the brothers in there. Because, see, you know, everybody knows here I root for that alleged baseball team in Flushing. But the thing is, what got me hooked was the boys from Mobile. Tommy Cleon Jones.
And Cleon, correct. HBCU brothers is too.
Man, you had Ed Charles, who was near the end of his career. But see, here's the thing. Cleon on the farm. They had John Milner. But see, they also had a fair to Midland pitcher who unfortunately never pitched for them, but wound up having a decent career later on. Mike Bibby's brother,
the NBA player. Henry Bibby's brother, Mike Bibby's uncle.
And see, my guy was Kenny Singleton. I was so mad when they traded him. I was more mad when he got traded for Rusty Staub than when Tom Seaver got traded.
Montreal Expos, real quickly. Ellis Valentine, Warren Cromartie, and Andre Dawson.
Turned that man's knees into Swiss cheese, for Christ's sake.
And another guy, Guerrero, wasn't bad either. Check out this lineup: Gates Brown, Ron LaFleur, and Willie Horton.
And a fair to Midland young second baseman by the name of Lou Whitaker.
Who should be in the
damn Hall of Fame too, by the way. But that's another 2 hour conversation.
We'll save that for later.
I mean the brothers were everywhere, man. So, you know, during that era back in those pictures.
Just out of curiosity, did anybody catch the Jackie Robinson thing on the History Channel the other night?
No, I missed it.
I'm sure it's going to be reshown. But what it basically did was it was called Beyond Jackie, and it basically took the story of Bill White, Bob Gibson, and Kurt Flood, and how all of their lives intertwined with baseball after Jack, because see, here's the thing that they don't tell you. They had to put up with the same bullshit as Jack.
Yes, they did.
Maybe even worse to a certain extent. Because see, everybody always, we all know it's well documented what Jackie went through in Philly, in Cincinnati, in St. Louis, and all that stuff. But you got to remember, Dick Allen began his career in Arkansas. They were calling
him. Yes, he did.
He got called routinely nigga before he even got to Philly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no greater Cub than Ernie Banks.
Oh, God, no.
Right.
And see, here's the other stuff.
Like a 6'4 shortstop, right? Like a 6'4 shortstop.
Here's a great trivia question. Ernie started his career shortstopping for the Kansas City Monarchs. When he finally signed by the Cubs, the guy that took over for him is more well known as a Hall of Fame basketball coach, Davey Whitney. the legendary basketball coach of Alcorn State. He followed him as the Monarchs
Correct.
As the Monarchs everyday
Correct.
Shortstop before that.
Correct. Correct.
That's and see, but see, the thing that the documentary focused on the '81 All Star game that year. Remember, that was the year of that first strike when they had the two halves. That I think you had of the two teams, both American League and National League, you had 25 African American players spread out.
Wow.
On those two teams, that's still the highest at one point. And we're talking guys like Dave Parker, Dave Lopes,
Rod Carew, for sure. He was
Ron
LaFleur, Joe Morgan,
yep.
Mm-hmm. George Foster,
yep. Mm-hmm. 81, and see. That's the thing that still is tough, I think, for a lot of us black baseball fans, is that you literally got to go to Helen Hunt to find brothers. I mean, you see more brothers playing hockey now on a percentage right now. Hockey has more black players than Major League Baseball. If someone had told me that when I was 10 years old, I'd have said, "What straight jacket are you wearing?"
All right, back to the okay. Real quick, back to the 70s. The only true everyday players that were Caucasian for the Cincinnati Reds Big Red Machine was Pete Rose and Johnny Bench. Perez at first, Morgan at second.
Concepcion at short.
Cesar Germanimo, George Foster, and Griffey in the outfielder.
That's right.
And you had Dan Dreesen. Meanwhile,
Dan Dreesen was on the farm.
Remember the skinny little pitcher that they had, Tom Hall?
Yep,
the blade.
Tom the Blade.
Left-hander.
And see, that's my growing up. That was when I was learning that's what I was learning about baseball. We had some minor league teams here, and it was fun. I got a chance to see Jim Rice playing for the then Bristol Red Sox.
Wow.
along with some skinny white boy from California by the name of Fred Lynn. Fun stuff.
Damn,
man.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. I loved it.
You have to remember.
Yeah, Jim Rice. He was right there with Elson Howard with not speaking up, but that's another story. Yeah, Mike, you were saying?
You were talking about the racism that some of these players went through.
Oh,
you got to remember, a lot of the pitchers experienced even more than that because the pitcher is a dominant position. It's a control position. When Bob Gibson was on the mound,
I agree, but
between Roseboro and Hendricks and Earl Batty and Paul Casanova, there were a bunch of brothers who were caught.
Wasn't he a brother for the Braves? Earl Williams.
Rookie of the Year for 71 or 72.
He's from Montclair, I think. He's from Montclair.
I think so. Paul Casanova has a distinction. He was the last Negro leaguer from the era after Jackie to sign with the major leagues. He was like the last of the Mohegans. Paul Casanova.
His forte was throwing people out. Everybody could not run on Cassie. That's what he was known for. That's what kept him in the league, in the big league.
Said Tony, yes. Who are you talking about? I missed the name, sir.
Paul Casanova. He began his career with the old Washington Senators, but he played most of his.
Bro. I didn't hear about
him. I was on the steady diet of chicken wings and potato chips back in the way. That's why I have that lovely physique I have now.
I'm surprised you didn't say Hennessy as a chaser there, T Mac.
No. I was strictly a great Kool Aid guy. None of the hard stuff.
What was the brother that caught for the Marlins? The Marlins World Championship.
Charlie Johnson. He was a first round pick.
He went to the U, right?
Yep, he was. And in many ways, he's the last of the Mohegans. Him and Mitch Webster.
Who's that brother that caught for the Yankees and caught for the Pirates? Caught for the Yankees. He was the light skinned brother. I was a Yankee catcher not too many years ago. I think he played with the Pirates too, then played with the Dodgers.
Russell Martin. Yeah, he was out there. Okay.
Dodgers organization as well.
Tony, it was going beyond Jackie on the history nerd, right?
If you've got like cinema or it should be on there. But it's a really good watch.
Mike, weigh in on what you were saying about the black pictures, Mike.
Well, when it came to the black pictures, you were looking at a whole different dynamic because you had a black man taking control of a whole situation.
They didn't
say what they want about black quarterbacks, but they didn't say shit about black pitchers. And if you were of the intimidating mind and built of like a Ferguson Jenkins, like a Bob Gibson, you know, what could they say? Or J.R. Richard? You know, the first time that J.R. Richard came to the mound, you know they were shaking in their boots like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
What if this
power
guy hits me with the
brain?
That's right. Power pitcher. You know, it was easy.
So Randy Johnson, I'm sorry, you weren't first. It was J.R. Richard, Randy Johnson.
Absolutely.
Don Wilson was a fastball pitcher too, but J.R. Mm-hmm. was the intimidator. 6'8", looking down from that mm-hmm. little mound,
throwing.
You know,
smoke.
Yes, indeed. Kind of hard to sit in the back.
I have to look it up. I think JR might have been one of the last to throw, have 300 Ks in a season.
Yeah, he was probably always around 300.
His rookie year, he did 289.
Yes.
He did 289 his first full season. So he wasn't, you know, he wasn't no joke. And a lefty on top of that? I'm like, and Mike, it's ironic, and I don't want to give away too much of it, but when Gibson came up, the Cardinals had an alleged manager by the name of Solly Hemus.
Yes,
I remember that. Yes,
and Solly Hemus was basically, for lack of a better word, Ben Chapman with a brain, and that ain't saying much. And he basically was like, you know, he's not good enough. And see, another thing here, and if you didn't think the color barrier wasn't going on, you got to remember, Kurt Flood was originally signed by the Cincinnati Reds. Matter of fact, Dana Pinson, and Frank Robinson were all in the Reds outfield at one point, and Cincinnati was like, oh, no, we can't do this.
Too many Negroes.
That's basically why Kurt Flood wound up being a St. Louis Cardinal.
That's right.
And Tony, what happened? When Vader Pinson got in the league, he took over the banner of being the fastest guy in Major League Baseball, which they tried to attribute to Mickey Mantle.
Yes.
No, please. Yeah, I'm loving the sagacity of the panel with, you know, the brothers who put in work and how, you know, the range of the knowledge of what takes place and how, you know, we talk about a sport that some of these mm-hmm. networks, debate shows, never talk baseball, ever. Never mention it. They don't have the knowledge that we are hearing, that we're just talking about all off the top, no script, no
well,
producer,
remember,
no
it,
video.
It, it's a great American mm-hmm. pastime, which means it's the great white game. You know, if there was one thing I wish. We could have
it's
seen.
It's straight out of Kemet, man. Baseball is
no,
straight out of
no
Kemet. The diamond, the number nine,
yes.
The nine innings, the whole
yes.
layout. I mean, I can get mm-hmm. metaphysical with the thing. Maybe I'll put an article together, but it's out of it, bizarre
like
as it sounds. It's out mm-hmm. of Kemet.
Yes,
that whole
no,
divide
exactly
and design of the game. In terms of the mathematics, it's a supreme mathematically ruled game with the nine innings, the 27 outs, 2 + 7 = 9, 3 outs are in and 3 strikes, you're out, 3 × 3 = 9. Everything circles back to the 9. So it's rounded
yes, it
in
does.
A certain way. The diamond is based mm-hmm. on geometric, sacred geometry. You see
mm-hmm.
what I mean? So it's the whole concept. When the brothers was balling, it was not only a threat to just what they were doing, they were actually mastering sacred geometry. The
yeah.
measurement
well,
of the field, the distance,
the
speed ratio, the hill. There you
that's
go. I'm going to bounce up that. It's our shit is what I'm trying to say, basically.
It is our
the white
shit.
Man played
always,
it, but it's
always,
our
it's,
shit.
It's, I mean,
always has been.
It, it's
always
our shit
been.
Because the
it
Negro League game had power and the style in which
yes, sir.
The Negro League ball players played it. It was akin to the bebop musicians. There was rhythm in everything that was done, from the way
yep.
they slid
mm-hmm.
to the way they tracked down fly
mm-hmm.
balls to everything. Every aspect about it was about blackness. And it was so black
Mike,
that they couldn't stand Mike. The statistics that they had accrued. Yes.
You got forget, that right.
Don't
you got that right.
Don't forget maximum small ball. What's the end of that band? The bunt. The moving of the bat.
Oh, yes.
Somebody
that's
gets
right.
killed in second base. They don't do – which is a big argument I have
the bunt,
with my man now.
The Baltimore
guys
chop.
Are afraid.
Well, mm-hmm. yep.
It's a rounded mm-hmm. ball chasing a rounded bat at a certain
mm-hmm.
velocity. And that's why
mm-hmm.
the brothers in Cuba, closer to
yes.
us still, and why
yes.
they were mastering
mm-hmm.
the game, because they
mm-hmm.
were understanding the concept of the sacred geometry within
mm-hmm.
baseball. That is
yep.
laid out.
Yep.
You know, if you look
yeah.
at the rudiments
mm-hmm.
of how this whole laid out is sacred geometry.
Yep.
And guess
yeah,
what?
Don't
guess
think.
What? That's
mm-hmm.
why. That's why they won't talk about the Yankees
yes,
going
sir.
Down to Cuba and getting their butt handed to them.
That's right.
Screw
that's
them.
Right.
And Ty Cobb. They won't talk about that.
That's right.
Oh, hold
that's
on.
Right.
Now, don't
that's
think. Look,
right.
Don't think for
and
one
see,
minute. Don't think for one minute that the brothers did not enjoy hitting the shit out of that white ball.
and you know what? Down in the Dominican Republic, they can love hoop. They still
that's
don't
right.
give it up for baseball. They still do not
now,
give it up for baseball.
Jesse Royals, the World Series, and they were so bad because the Royals were playing black baseball.
That's
right.
Yeah, I mean, where the hell is Amos Otis when you need him?
Yes.
Oh,
Amos Otis, Al Collins. I mean, come on, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Hal McCray,
John Mayberry. John Mayberry,
Willie Wilson,
John
mm-hmm.
Mayberry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hey, check this one out. UL Washington.
UL Washington.
UL
Washington.
Man,
if nothing else, his toothpick should be in the Hall of Fame. If
Brother played shortstop with a toothpick. Him and Frank was turning them double plays, man. Nothing was getting
yeah.
by him. And Ozzie
yes,
and Ernie right. Banks, you know, I mean, the best defensive, best offensive shortstops. Sorry, A-Rod, pre-thing. Ernie Banks was let's play two men playing those early games in Chicago. They hardly had any night games running up those
that's
numbers.
That's right. Wasn't like
absolutely.
And guys,
yes.
think, and guys,
mm-hmm.
about guys, let's not forget, one of the reasons that baseball had to integrate because the All-Star game by the black by Negro League was
outperforming
attendance-wise.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The East-West.
Yep.
The East-West Classic, which is what it was always called, they would play two a year. They play one in Chicago. They would play one in New York. Matter of fact, if you ever want to get a great book written by Larry Lester, the East-West Classic, Baseball's Black Showcase. And what it does is it goes through every game that it has the box score, the play by play of each one of the East West Classics that was played. But what it also does, it goes through a synopsis of what was going on in the country that year. And you know what the real treasure trove is for that book? It has articles in there from Sam Lacy, Bill Munn Sr., Wendell Smith, the guys. I mean, let's face it, none of us would be here without the three of those guys. They laid the groundwork. We honor them. We honor them every day when we're on there. All of it. And see, that's the thing. Because, see, what I love about what baseball can do is, from Cool Papa Bell to Jackie Robinson to Lou Brock to Ricky Henderson, it'll change. But it's just the added flavor to it. It's changed.
Well, baseball is also a fashion statement because more people wear a baseball cap regardless of the emblem. Right. Even NFL coaches wear a baseball cap. That is not for the NFL. Papa George Halas and the motherfuckers and Tom Landry were wearing fedoras. They were not wearing baseball caps.
Well, they were communists anyway, but that's another story.
And somewhere Hollywood Henderson agrees with you. And so, you know, with that being said, though, it's still a baseball cap.
Absolutely.
Okay. Look, I'll take communists for 1,000, please. If I can shift slightly.
That was pretty rich, man. The Red Scare.
I find it amazing that as we go from baseball to football, sometimes the best thing to do is nothing at all. You have Baker Mayfield and his no-playing ass sitting in limbo thinking that, you know, I'm fucked because I got to sit behind his brother. Now, of course, it comes out that Watson is going to do time. I don't mean times in terms of jail. I mean in terms of games. And he may sit out the whole season. Now, Mayfield was number two on the depth chart. And in honesty, he was number two in talent because the boy wasn't shit. But I will say, now he's lucked into a situation where he doesn't have to go anywhere because it doesn't seem like Watson's going to play, and it seems as if he's won the starting job by default. So,
not necessarily.
Patrick, decipher that, please.
Not necessarily. There is distinct and hot rumors that the Browns are looking for another quarterback in case, and guess who it is?
Who?
Jimmy Garoppolo.
They just can't get it together. They just can't get it together for quarterbacks, man.
When do they play the Steelers?
To quote Gary, that's all I need to know. When they play the Steelers, here's the issue.
You're talking about with Watson, which I kind of thought, but it came fast. You know, he made a deal with the 20 women. I was trying to get the guy to say, well, he's going to jail. No, he can't make money in jail to pay these.
Part of the 230 milli went live. Here comes the extra affidavits, right?
It went from 24 to 62.
He's got to buy it down, man. He's got to pay it down, right? You know, he's got to get the disclosure. He has to pay it down.
Yep.
And this is what I mentioned, and I see it a lot in the NBA, man. I mean, there's a lot of stories where there's paternities and it disappears, right? Because, you know, someone got paid off very quickly. Exactly. My God, man. We ain't got enough time, man. Guys,
remember that move? Remember that scene in Steve Martin's The Jerk when he's writing out all them checks for $2.21? I'm imagining Watson basically doing the same thing.
He has to. And yes, they're there for the payoff. I mean, I'm not going to knock the women or what their story is, you know, but 66 women in 17 days and, you know, having someone for the Texans be a purveyor for you. It wasn't the best decision making. But this is what my concern with Watson was, even when he went to Cleveland, and that is they're milking him out like they did Vic. Two seasons missed.
Yep.
Sorry, you are not the same quarterback. Two seasons missed.
That's exactly right.
You are not the same quarterback, man. Kaepernick had a tryout with the Raiders, and they said, "Man, we're better off, you know, getting one of the high school kids out here to get this tryout." He was that bad, you know. Damn. And a lot has to. He was that bad with the Raiders. A lot has to do with the fact of activity. Well, right now they're numbing Deshaun down. If he can't get on that field and get those reps in, and the psychologicals, the pondering, the private moments, the quiet time, the review, the articles, the, you know, the mistakes made, all that milk, the energy pool,
black ass up.
That's called death by a million paper cuts.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or in case 1.5 million paper cuts, I guess.
Literally, man.
In this case, 230 million paper cuts.
Because you know what I'm saying?
Every penny worth of that. Yes, they will. Mm-hmm. And they won't hesitate. All this motherfucker has to do is be mediocre for one season. And, of course, they'll start those stupid commercials again. You know,
exactly. Is he your guy after the layoff, right? I mean, we seen that with McNabb when he signed that crazy contract. We knew he never was going to get to see all that money with the Redskins. I mean, the Washington football team at the time. We knew he would never see that money. And once that ended, McNabb was out the league. Culpepper out the league.
I will say this in terms of Browns camp, the players love.
No, he's that guy on the field, right? I mean, you are right. I mean, he's that guy on the field. He's never been that person. The problem is, and who've coached, right, scouted athletes, you know, who've done the analytics, that time away and those reps, you can't simulate that at a workout. You got to get on the field.
Got to get it.
You know, Eric, I will say this. Now, Mike was a little older when he had his exile. Now, Watson, still relatively a baby. And remember, you know, he got beat, you know, he got beat like a runaway slave them last 2 years in Texas.
Yes, he did.
He
did. They beat him down.
Which to me means he needed treatment of his body. Now, how he went about it, it's not my place to decide.
Exactly.
But when you're
exactly.
underneath that kind of
exactly.
physical duress, people don't understand it because he can't use cannabis, right? Because that's against the league policy. He can't pass the piss test.
You know what? Put it this way: what's the statutes in the state of Ohio? That'll be my first question.
I don't know.
Yeah,
right.
It's coming though.
Oh, okay. Because that's the thing. Because there are a bunch of ex-players who have been trying to push that cannabis thing to make it so that it's not illegal in the NFL. But, of course, you know, those owners still see the movie Reefer Madness in their sleep.
Go on, Tony.
There's a better chance of DeMaurier Smith becoming the commissioner than them pulling that cannabis thing legalized, unless it becomes a public relations thing. But even then, you know the NFL always going to go kicking and scratching and
Tony,
stuff like that.
Tony, I'll say this. From a little what I do know, based upon the investments of individual players that are making money quite well, I'll give you two things. First of all, you see the relationship of certain players whose stature financially can be invested with what the owners, who the owners know, to be reinvested what they have to be partners. And secondly, I'll give you an example. There's a thing called jackpot. Jackpot is being invested. It basically is most folks get the lotto tickets, you know, like I get mine. They go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
There's now an app online being developed that you can go online and get your lotto ticket.
Yeah.
Now, there are people now, and only 5% of the lotto tickets now are online. There's three investors called Jackpot, and three of the investors involved were called a guy named Robert Kraft, a guy named James Harden, the CEO of Fantastics, other people like that are investing in Jackpot to where it will be up to like almost 70% of the lottery tickets online.
That's gonna mess it up. That blue haired woman that counts out her 100 pennies to buy a quick pick.
All I'm saying is this. Once the right person that can, like I said, the PR that can cover that with cannabis, you better believe owners is going to be in there some way, somehow, some NFL owners is going to be
there is a lot of money in those dispensaries. They did let Snoop do the halftime show this year, did they not? So, you know,
in reality, Mike Tyson's doing supremely well with his cannabis farm.
Yeah, he's 100% correct.
You know, Sean Kemp and Gary Payton in the state of Washington, they have their own dispensary. Matt Barnes, you know,
Sean Kemp and marijuana? That's surprising.
Yeah. Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson have their Up in Smoke podcast. But it's based Smoke is weed, right? You know, I mean, they don't front on that.
Do they?
I remember there was a certain center that wore 00 for the Celtics. That somebody followed him in his hotel room. Someone followed him in his hotel room, and there was enough roaches in there that didn't need insect spray in the ashtray.
Are you trying to say that he knows the words to Easy Rider by heart? I think
the chief may have blazed a few before he went off on Lambeer.
I'll end on this. All you have to understand is this, what I just told you about investments. There's a guy that was the Speaker of the House, now is a major investor in what?
It's legalized in many states, you know, and so the thing is, you know, the state of Colorado, right, they're the first of that 420 day, so they turn it up like nobody's business when that happens, and then there was a big talk about what do the Broncos, exactly, what do the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, you know, and other teams get locally, if it's legal in their state, you can't really prosecute them. But again, league sport rules have their own certain things as well. So again, you know, it's kind of like, you know, straying the lines of who's the least corrupt, because these situations are all part of the societal thing. But now it's delegalized because they've taken little Mookie off the corner and his nickel bags he was selling as a side hustle.
How about that shit?
It made it a dispensary game. So that's what's happening.
Mike, who's the leader of the club that's for you and me? TANNIB.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Because I got in discussion with some people recently at something I was involved with about, you know, in terms of, you know, top teams and top players. And it was it wasn't crazy, but it was an evaluation. I'm talking about numbers that we talk about now on two players.
Right.
You know, they have this top 10. You know, we know how this thing goes.
Sure.
But, and the top 10 from the ESPN and NBA players. And they
All-time greats, right? All-time greats, top 10.
All-time, that's right. Yeah,
right,
and,
right.
And,
okay.
And they took out the big O and put Steph there in the top 10.
And they won't figure it out.
Here's
the thing, Patrick. I think all of us genuinely, for the most part, respect what Steph has done. You know, he's a legend. You know, he's his dad played the game. But see, this is the problem. That mentality of if it didn't happen before 1979,
amen,
it don't count. And I just have a problem with that because see. Especially now, if you look between Baseball Reference, Basketball Reference, Football Reference, Hockey Reference, between YouTube and whatever, you cannot go into these conversations saying, "Well, I didn't." Because see, the minute you say "I didn't," I get full slapping procedures because the information is out there now.
It's kind of interesting with the Steph Curry analysis, right? Because again, you know, with that analysis, he's a total, you know, manifestation of the David Stern NBA when he wanted more European players in the league with the 3-point shot, right? And the distance now, again, you know, he's a total different caliber shooter. You cannot be Steph Curry because guys shoot all the time. They shoot teams out of the league, him and Clay, but the way he has to play and work to get his shot within the system under a coach who played the 3-point game, Steve Kerr, how he was a product of the David Stern NBA to bring smaller players, more European players in the league, right? It wasn't about those certain things like that. So he has overmastered a skill set, Curry, right? He's overmastered it because the bottom line is the game still is putting the ball in the hoop. What Boston was sagely doing but couldn't do enough of what amazes me when I watched, you know, a lot of the Warrior games. You got to go at Curry defensively to wear him down. Run him through 20 picks if you have to. He can hide on D so he doesn't lose. Yeah, he's a great conditioned athlete, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is he's warped the whole basketball game with that long ball game the Warriors play. But then no one plays like Curry, right? No one plays like Curry because he can win the free throw contest. He can win the 3-point contest. He can be clutch. He can do it in games. He can do it so that every level of challenge. Some guys can't do the dunk contest, but are great dunkers. Curry can win 3-point shootouts, right? He can win the free throw contest. He can be clutch. At every level of measuring shooting, he's A1, no question. Yeah. But it's a congregation of the bastardization of NBA basketball with the 3-point game.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
And guess what? I want to add to that, Eric. Add this. The physicality of the game that Oscar played and during that time.
Correct. Correct.
Would not be allowed to have Curry. He would be good now, but boy, he wasn't going to be going
make a great point because back in the day, the hand check was legal. And Clyde Frazier and them of them, they had heavy hands.
Can you imagine Norm Van Leer checking Steph Curry? Norm Van Leer and Jerry Sloan? Good Lord.
Once the NBA outruled the hand check, right, and anything outside the three-point arc, you can't touch a player. So a guy with great handles that Curry has, and the way they run the picks. I mean, I mean Curry works his ass off, but he has to play his style. I mean, he can go wing to wing in no time. Man, I watch how ESPN did have one great feature, and they deserve credit for it on one of their channels. They had this above the rim cam. And that way you could literally watch the game as if in the arena. And as a basketball purist, I love that shit because I can see all the plays, how they develop, what it looks off ball. The game looks totally different that way, right, than watching it on a regular level. And so and there's no audio in a lot of cases, too, which is even better. And how the Warriors were running that damn offense, the amount of floor Thompson and Curry have to cover baseline to baseline, they're going to get them shots off. It wears the defense out because no one plays this way. No one is playing that way. And they no time to drop.
And Eric, here's the problem. The very same people who are trying to anoint Steph are the same ones that for the last 3-4 years, the Warriors are done. Their dynasty is done. They're whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to try to tell you that they're bigger than life, bigger than God. That's the problem. We all recognize what Steph is.
Steph Curry, to me, again, basketball analysis has been around it, right? He's one of my favorite players to watch because he dominates the game below the rim. He's not a high flyer. He's not catching back to alley-oops. He's not out-athleting you at all. But his fundamentals are so tight.
Exactly.
His fundamentals are tight as fuck. And to me, he's a carbon copy
of
watching a guy – watching a guy master the fundamentals, mastering his skill set, and just taking it to another level. Props to Steph all day long regarding those components.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he takes it beyond the three-point line. We've seen two-point shooters do this.
Correct. He can get to the rack.
We've seen Dave Bing do it. We've seen Earl Monroe do it. We've seen just about anybody who was worthwhile, Hal Greer, Chet Walker. We've seen these guys do it. We've seen them do it in spurts, but they were just two-point baskets. You know, now we see somebody who's conditioned to understand that when he goes out on the court, he's taking 3 points because he's going to be behind that line. He's going to run his offense behind that line. They're going to run picks for him behind that line.
And you know what? And it's even more than that because he can do that for 4 quarters in overtime.
Yes.
Without losing that touch, right, for the most part.
Him
and Clay both for the most part, right? And it took Clay to come back to open that floor up for them to get that title back. So props to Clay and all the work. And, my son's high school team lost to his high school team in the state finals. And I talked to that coach before the game. I'm like, what are you going to do about Michael Thompson's son? Because that's all I knew him at the time. Oh, we got him covered. He ain't going to do shit. And he set an Arco Arena record for 6 3-pointers. And he's still running the shit down right now. And he's still running it down right now. So props to Clay, too.
Curry's now coaching the Washington Generals right now.
You're right. Eventually he got we got him, man. Nah, man. We're not worrying about him. I'm like, all right, let's talk. And then he drills such a record, state final record in Cali for most threes of the championship game. And he's still rolling. Clay can put up 50 points and take 5 dribbles, right?
But the point
with everything you said is on point. But what I'm saying in conjunction with Oscar and Steph is that Oscar played a different kind of game. That's
Robinson's an overall greater player. Than Curry all day long.
What
he went through socially as well from Christmas Addicts in Indianapolis.
Yes, Lord.
All the way through the NBA, all the way with the collective bargaining agreement and free agency, there's no contest between Steph and Oscar Robinson.
That way.
And that's Steph, in this weird category. He's an anomaly, man, under the David Stern regime of creating this long ball game.
Long ball game
that also lights up the TV and marketing people. You can do this too, but you can't.
Well, and that's why you see Curry. That's why you see Curry on advertisement. He does play with a childish joy. It is genuine, right? He does play with this non-arrogant style, even though he's an arrogant MF for taking 70-foot shots and shit. You're real arrogant when you do that, right? But the point is, and a lot of confidence. But he's marketable because more people in the world can relate to his height and his size than they can relate to Shaq. They can relate to
They may not be able to be like Mike, but they think they can be like Steph Curry.
That's exactly. And in the Bay Area, you know, high school hoops are the area around here. And then what you see in the collegiate landscape, I think there was a Division II team. And they were a weird squad, man. I watched the Division II National Championship game one year. It was the Final Four because my nephew was in the Final Four that year for his team out of Hawaii. And it was on CBS, right? And they had this, I don't know who this school, but these guys look like a bunch of those ZZ Top dudes with the long beard. It was like some kind of religious school. So and they were all white cats, right? And they had those long beards and shit and almost shaved heads. And these MFers came into that tournament averaging like 160 a game or something. Everything they shot was threes. Everything.
Shit.
And they had a team. But see, that's that Curry effect. One thing Curry has done, he's augmented the game like no others in the sense of his expertise, specialty.
Terrible, augmented it, man.
And I don't know if that's healthy. I don't know if that's the best thing to do, but he's augmented the landscape because of his style of play and the Warriors themselves, because everyone shoots better when they become a Warrior. When does Oscar Porter and Wiggins start knocking down threes?
That's true. Wiggins played his best ball.
Just gonna do the same thing, Mike. You know, they tried to bury that boy, and
Kareem made a great point because here's a guy, sage, always at the highest level of hoop. Matter of fact, I've seen this little 8-minute video of him going against Olajuwon and Sampson, that Twin Tower team. Kareem was old, man, but Kareem was dealing with both those bows. I mean, he was like working really good. And real quick, to that, the Rockets literally probably had to start the tallest starting five at that time. Robert Reed was 6'8". He was playing point. Rodney McCray is 6'8". He was playing two guard. Hakeem and Ralph Sampson, the Twin Towers. And Lou Lloyd, 6'6", out of Philly, was a small forward.
That's right.
And I was like, man, that starting five was no joke, man. You don't even see – now they play small ball. Look at that Rockets team that went to the finals. I mean, that was a tall, athletic, and they can run the fast break. A lot of times Sampson was pushing the fast break, right?
He was pushing it.
So what Kareem said about Steph, and I don't remember all the words, but he said he watched a videotape of Curry, working out shooting, right? And he said that he literally watched him – run off 74 straight three-pointers in practice. I've heard some people I know personally, Festus Azili, who I get worked up with. Festus played with some of their championship teams, right? He would say it was nothing to see him run off 100 in a row, like five straight days in practice.
Jeez. That's interesting because Charles Barkley once said that Andrew Tony was the best shooter he ever saw because Tony hit 75 jump shots in a row. And everybody remembers how he used to shoot that shot. Yeah. He'd jump up and he'd feel like he was jumping his chest, jump like he was jumping into you and stuff. But
if you watch Curry's form, why he can shoot off balance and shoot distance, it's the same form every time. And it's almost like the best way I can kind of describe that to me because
muscle memory.
That's very true, and a lot of guys have it. But he reminds me of very unique guy in two categories, right? One, he can shoot eight quarters, and that's the same friggin' way. Home, road, don't matter, right? The other thing, too, he practices the same way. He has no arm fatigue. No arm fatigue, man. You know how they tell quarterbacks you can only have so many throws or pitches so many. He has no arm fatigue.
Release the same.
Fatigue.
Release every time the same. Release
every
right.
time the same. Right, and what it reminds me of is one of the Olympic events that I always like watching is archery, right? You know, that archery event, especially, and some of the women, my God, you don't want to be running from their ass if they got a bow and arrow.
that's right. The actress, Gina Davis, she made the Olympic team as an archer.
I mean, I watched the Korean archery team. I was like, damn, don't shit. They were on a whole nother level. I mean, Curry reminds me, again, the uniqueness factor, again, of a great archer.
That's interesting because when they talk about shooting the arrow, they always say, it's not the arrow, it's the archer. So you can shoot any kind of way you want. If you're the right kind of person shooting it, you will hit whatever it is you're trying to hit. Gentlemen, I revert back to the beginning and Radio Reggie because we were talking about the bad boy down there in Washington and how he's misbehaving and how really there's nothing that Commissioner Goodell can do about it. What can they actually do to this guy? What have they been saying in D.C. about Daniel Snyder?
Number one, owners are not going to get double ownership. Number two, just be honest about something. Daniel Snyder knows already that he has a billion-dollar industry. They've already tried not to come out to Richmond, Virginia, for a training camp. And Virginia told them, we're not being your state of the state of Virginia. But, you know, I know you want to talk about the bad boy, but I got to ask Patrick real quick. I'm a ham sandwich again. Do 20 ladies, and I still not trying to be disrespectful, but 20 ladies say, hey, we got paid, and four, like, no matter what, we're going to hold out even though they claim they don't want to bring it before the judge. What the ham sandwich is going on in Cleveland?
Like I said before, they don't want this brother to go to jail. They want his money. Now the other one will hold out for more. Basically, they want to hold out for more, which they ain't gonna get. From my opinion, but that's what it really boils down to. Let me add this to what you're saying, Reggie. The NFL Players Association is really being serious about dealing with this situation with Deshaun Watson. And here's how, and here's your rationale. They're saying you want to, you know, deal with Deshaun Watson and his situation, but before you suspend him or whatever time you're going to do it, think about this. How is the NFL owners going to do anything when you got Daniel Snyder with his situation? And Lord knows how many women he's been messed with.
Come on, Jerry.
How are you going to grab a crab with his situation in Florida? And like that's the first time he was doing that in a massage parlor. How are you going to do with Jerry Jones that he got pregnant that Bill talked about? And
We'll hit old wild turkey Jerry Jones. I'm appalled. I'm shocked.
I can imagine those 20 women on a bus singing to themselves, I'm going to sue this Negro because I need cash now. Call A.G. Butler. 877 cash now.
877
cash now.
Jimmy Haslam, thank you so much.
Hey, but Patrick, you ready for the latest crazy idea they got? Now since Michael Jordan can't find a coach, they are now trying to get together and bring in
Don Staley to look at taking the job. I say, hell no.
Oh, no.
No,
oh
way,
my
Don.
God.
Stop, please.
That would be a drop down.
That would be a drop down.
That would be
better.
That would be a major drop down, and it would not be very kind for any woman to be in that position because they would start having to hear the words of two shorts' favorite words, and I'm going to just go chart. Mm-hmm. There was a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Charlie Batch.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Charlotte Hornets are the most dysfunctional front office in the NBA, and that's because I'm not considering my Washington Wizards. They're more dysfunctional than the Wizards. Oh, my God.
It's kind of interesting because Kenny Williamson, right, he used to be an assistant coach under Kenny Williams, right? Kenny was my man. He was with Valvano at the Iona, you know, when he first started, Jimmy Valvano. Then he went to Pat Kennedy at Florida State when Kennedy took over Iona.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became the director of scouting. And I was talking to him. This is when Bob Johnson owned the team. He said, man,
oh,
they got
Lord.
A bare
oh,
bones.
Another
he told me, up. Yeah, he said, when they got it, he said, our scouting department is beyond bare bones. You know, our marketing, our technology, you know what I mean? A bitty basketball team's got more components to work with than me.
Yeah,
no one has ever officially seen the financial transaction between Michael Jordan and Bob, right, of the original Bob.
A-Pony on the line, too.
In other words, there is this thing called ceremonial ownership as financed by David Stern for all the money you made us. Here's your honorarium.
All the money you made us. You ain't lying. This is before gambling sites, before fantasy betting, before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know Mikey made them gugobs, beyond gugobs of money. Because none of this was even on the map before they said, yeah, okay, Mikey, go take a break. Go mess with your dream of playing baseball. And then when you come back, we'll make some more money together.
Yeah, that $50,000 check you wrote Slim Buller, you know, for, you know, a hole-in-one for a putting contest, that's not working out, homeboy. And there's some other things out there to step away for a minute. But, I mean, the thing being is, it's like that pledge he made to the black community after the George Floyd thing, has anyone seen a check?
Eric, it's bounced around here at least a couple of times, so I'll just leave it at that.
And you know what, T-Mac? It's the same check he wrote Bob Johnson. There was no check.
Oh, shit. 877
ceremonial ownership. I mean, they're calling Adam Silver. Hey, are you going to be able to afford Atkinson? Because Mike said we got to ask you. You know, can you cut
the
check?
For Christ's sake, Mike, even the Duke brothers compared that $1. You know,
that's right.
Usually when there's a merger, there's books, right? I mean, such and such franchise was sold for such and such million. I still have yet to see the headline of what Mike paid Bob. I have yet to see it.
That's definitely a question for next time. That's a nice way to set things up for our next episode. The gentleman, the eyes late. I need to get the final thoughts. Reggie, please set it off.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, it's amazing to me that we have the January 6th hearings going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, we had the great reunion that everybody couldn't wait to see. Martin. Now, Ed said, why are you bringing up this reunion in March? Let's go back and the situation where the Me Too movement, a.k.a. Gina, said that the brother tried to sexually harass her. Now, I don't know all the facts, but there's rumors out there that the now ex-husband wasn't too happy with his lady being groped on by Martin. But, the sad part about it, we have seen so many positive images end up like the Hindenburg going down in flames, or like a Shakespeare play, a tragedy at the end. Then they just succumb to Jesus moment, a.k.a. Tommy Ford passing away. Oh, we need to get back together again. I'm so sorry I put everybody through this. Meanwhile, the image of a positive show was not only tarnished, but a mad reputation. I mean, hey, once again, black folks, black on black, should we say inflicting wounds. Just my opinion.
Interesting. That's nice. Patrick, come on with it.
About 5:23 this evening, I got a call from somebody, and they sent me an email, and I said, oh, wow, Patrick, I missed my workout because I wanted to check it out to see the validity of it. And the validity is this. It's the Ohio State University now ranks number one in EIL compensation and the number of athletes in the EIL deal. 1,000 deals have been made for each athlete. Each 1,000 athletes got a deal.
Oh, my.
Well, I wouldn't call somebody who I know who would get, he said, Patrick, it's true. Now, it doesn't surpass the $60 million that USC got in terms of total compensation, but every at a hot dog stand down the street from campus might be a sponsor for somebody. It's highly unusual, but it's happening.
I just hope that's real pork instead of dinosaur meat.
Man, no shit. Professor,
we want to. Earlier, somebody mentioned analytics. I don't quite understand it, but I know something about it. So what I did is I looked at the top scorers among HBCU players, former HBCU players. All of these young men played 4 years. And interestingly, benchmark I used Earl Monroe and Harry Ellis from Morehouse.
Okay.
And I used those because they were the first two who didn't score 3,000 points. Out of the first 12 players, only three had the benefit of the 3-point line. Three of the first five, but none of the first two had the 3-point line. And the first one had the 3-point line had a 1 year. And the point is this. The other day I was watching a video of a conversation between Earl Monroe and Clyde Frazier. And one of the things they talked about is, can you imagine in our day Seth Curry being left alone that far from the basket? You're like, I don't know, because somebody would be, somebody would have a hand in his face. Somebody earlier mentioned you checking on those kind of good things. You know, it's hard, and you with the ESPN syndrome need to get a grip. Because these guys are just put out good. Because one of the guys that talked about Earl Russell, he was one of the best one-on-one players ever. He was flat out putting up in your face. And just looking at that, I think I was right when I said earlier, early last year, that I probably would be watching a lot of basketball, especially with at the professional level, because it sucks. Well, even though I only watched a few minutes of the playoffs, I came to the same conclusion. It sucks. But anyway, it's also interesting. There's news of ownership, I believe, yesterday afternoon. The ladies said I should have her back Monday or Tuesday, depending on UPS. Well,
oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, if you want to order, we'll just go to my website to just order Black College Sports Encyclopedia. If we have footballs up here still with me, we want to shoot basketball. We're just ready to know if you want football or basketball.
Cool.
Because, you know, we didn't get more of these interesting as we go along. Now we're beginning to get more open-minded than they have what they teach you, players and coaches, back in the day. And I got a conversation a few days ago with this gentleman who was so adamant about what me refuting to be honest. You know, John Davis said the thing, he had the best recruiting class in the history of Jackson State. I asked him, did he mention that the 1961 team? No. Did he mentioned in 1974 team? No. Well, each of those teams had Hall of Famers. One of those teams had three. And two more who should be. And you know, fighting out of that. Well, that's Dion, okay? You know, Dion allowed everybody else. Anyway, I've been with on Facebook and
you
can order books at
www.blackheritage.com.
There you go.
Fred, I want to throw something out to Fred. I got some people looking forward to Pirates playing the Yankees on the betting line. The Pirates in third place in their division.
Excuse me?
I got some people who are with FanDuel. The Pirates are supposed to play Yankees. Supposed to play Yankees real soon, and they think it's going to be relatively competitive, with the Pirates being in third place in their division.
Well, okay. We shall see.
Stay tuned. Definitely. Stay tuned. www.blackheritagereview.com. Books, brick and brack. Get your hands on some Black history, because any time is a good time for some Black history.
And he can give my number. I answer them in between my Medicare calls.
Okay. Oh, Mike, let me cut this in, Mike.
Yes, sir.
I got to give ESPN some credit for what they did in 50-50 for talking about women's basketball.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of that too. Very good.
Yes.
Very, very good.
All right. Eric?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, always a good discourse, you know, with the brothers, you know, on the range of topics. No production meetings, you know, no producer, you know, no one ad-libbing. And, yeah, right. Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, Patrick's our producer. I forgot about that. He does that 24/7, you know. Pimping ain't easy, man. I ain't mad at you. But yeah, that's true. I forgot. Let me reframe. We do have a producer now.
Sometimes it's better that way.
Okay, gotcha. Right. Yeah, exactly. All the above, my brother. All the above, man. Kudos. I mean, Professor makes a good point. I mean, when you have the bandwidth of information that the brothers cumulatively have here, sometimes the question, I get asked the question, well, how can you enjoy this knowing what you know? You know what I mean? Like, in other words, I can look at certain coaches on the bench or, you know, I think they did a whack movie. This Adam Sandler's got a whack scouting movie on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
On Hustler?
Yeah, Hustler. Wow, yeah, that's the name of it.
Interesting show.
And watching some of these cats I know personally now get an IMDb card as an actress, quite hilarious, to say the least.
It was interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Very. I mean, LeBron produced it.
Am I correct that Queen Latifah plays his
yes,
husband,
she is.
I mean, his
yes,
wife?
She yes. Does. Yes, she did. Yeah, fortunately for them, there was no bedroom scenes, which was awesome. But he did do it. He did do a foot massage for Dana Owens out of Vailsburg High School in New Jersey. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
exactly. AKA UNITY. Yeah. That's a UNIT, Queen Latifah. Back, I mean, so in other words, we still can honor the game. I mean, in other words, watching the Celtics point guard with green hair dye, they're not going to win the championship just based on
there
that.
You go.
Just
there
based on that. The point guard's got his hair dyed green. Strike up the L, okay?
Strike up the L.
And I've seen a meme where Jason Tatum had a very poor game in the final game. They had Larry Bird in a Nino Brown get-up when they were sitting at the table. And
there
Jason Tatum was G-Money. And Bird puts the cane on his shoulder and goes, "You ain't built to handle this shit." You know what I mean? Bird was right, though. Respect to B's actually right. So, again, you know, with the cumulative history and the knowingness, and like we talked about, you know, the baseball and just ranging, and I wanted to mix in that even back then they had good middle relief pitchers who were brothers like Bob Veal and Rudy May.
Yep.
You know, cats like that, you know, that could come in. And then all the brothers that played, right, the May
and
brothers.
And Lee Smith's still in the Hall of Fame.
He finally got in
a couple years ago.
Real quickly, wasn't Bob Welch the last 30-game winner? Did he get to 30 in Oakland?
He got 27.
No,
27.
27. Okay, got him.
27. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
Denny McLean, or as he's known affectionately as 0156352 Blockcell 4.
Hey, man, Denny McLean was rolling with the Tigers when Motown was up and running, so he cut more deals and backstreet deals than Barry Gordy. He cut more deals than Barry Gordy when he was rolling. You know, he may have been with the Funk Brother. He may have been hung out with the Hunk Brothers. The Funk Brothers,
the original Chit Chat Club,
right?
Mm-hmm. He may have backed up
Levi Stubbs, you know, at a dice game with Paul Williams and family, right? So, you know, all that was to say that. But again, really nothing too much to add other than, like, you know, enjoy the discourse, you know, the range of information, you know, that was shared. Fred, I need you to send me what's your email address? Professor, if you're still out there?
Yeah.
Just fredwittit68@gmail.com.
All right, Fred Whitted. All right, because I tried the Black Heritage one. That's the only one I had on file to reach out to you, and it didn't go through. So I just wanted to make sure I got that. But overall, man, Biden, $65 million HBCU, 2023 budget. Kickback to all HBCUs is still in the dais. Let's see how it plays out.
All right. BG, what you going to do?
Number one, Colorado Avalanche District A 3-1 lead over the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Avalanche.
Game 5 on Friday night. It could be the end of the Lightning 2 Cup series.
Well, they short-circuit that in.
A great team, but Colorado, as in the beginning, of the series, I said Colorado was too fast. For Tampa Bay, and it proved out to be the case.
Well, if that's the case, knock some Kadri, get some East Asian flavor to the cup. He'll have his name on the cup if they win.
Number two.
Where's my Landeskog?
Today we had 3-4 shootings in the Bay Area.
Fuck is going on out there?
This is God's job. Republican Party, Democratic Party in Washington, D.C. Do your damn job and get it done.
See you Nicole, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and of course the Big Bake Tournament carries on Sunday.
And real quickly to that, Ice Cube would say, they give us guns and drugs, and you wonder why we thugs, every hood's the same.
Come on. There you go.
Biblical.
Give me. I finally have it here. tonight's version of Who Said This? Let me be clear. As I said to the players, I am not naive. If this is an arms race, and if the only weapon and the only weapon here is dollar bills, the PGA Tour can't compete. The PGA Tour can't compete with a foreign monarchy that is spending billions of dollars in an attempt to buy the game of golf. We welcome good, healthy competition. The LIV Saudi Golf League is not that. It's an irrational threat, one not concerned with the return on investment or true growth of the game. All of that just to say, oh, shit.
Oh, shit, indeed. No.
Well, who said it?
Oh, the commissioner of the PGA. Yeah.
Okay.
The commissioner of the soon to be defunct PGA Tour.
I thought you were going to say Phil Mickelson or something. Okay.
Well, no, yeah, right.
Okay.
Phil's out there cashing $1 million checks.
Well, as they say, when the funk hits the fan, it's trash. It's time to understand what's going down.
And Mike, what would you do if they're going to pay 5 times more salary than you got?
Well, you know what you're going to do is pull a Janet Jackson and get a 6-month marriage to an Arab sheikh. Or you're going to be a Mariah Carey and the rest of the brothers and sisters out there who will go to a private 16-year-old party and get paid like $5 million cash for about 2 hours of work. Or Instagram models who they import, and it ain't nothing nice when they do.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, it has been an interesting evening, but I still think about that orange head motherfucker who thought he was going to escape with the presidency. You know?
For a minute there, I thought you were talking about Baker Mayfield, but proceed.
Wesley Snipes once quoted the line, some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. Now, it was bad enough when he was just playing greed, but when that greed translates into stupidity, there's only one way I can appropriately end this.
Wonderful family and this wonderful composer. Dame Shirley is surely known as the UK's most successful female artist ever, and I, for one, cannot wait for her performance. But first, we must say farewell from the Classic Brit Award 2011. I'd like to thank all of our performers, presenters, and nominees for making tonight such a special occasion. Thank you. I'd also like to ask you to show your appreciation for the London Chamber Orchestra and our conductor, Christopher Warren Green. And now, to close the show, it's my very great honour to introduce to the stage a true global superstar. Dame Shirley Bassey is the only artist ever to have recorded 3 James Bond theme songs. Tonight, she'll perform one of those best love hits from the 1964 Bond film Goldfinger with Stuart Barton Dutton. Please, would you welcome to the stage, Dame Shirley Bassey.
I can't disguise what you see. It. For a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's a kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of his heart. His heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his light can't disguise what you feel. For a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's a kiss of death from Mr.
like that when I hit 85. Dame Shirley Bassey is no joke.
Good night.